Look in your home. Look in your office. Look in your home office. Everywhere you turn, there's so much smart. At Capella University, we think education should be smart, too. Our game-changing FlexPath format puts you in control of your master's degree, so you can learn how, when, and where you want. Smart, huh? Yeah, we think so, too. So if you want to take the next step in your career, make Capella your first step. Visit capella.edu to learn more. Capella University. Don't just learn, learn smarter.
This is Kim Meyer, host of Choose to Rise. Thanks for listening to the following broadcast on Public House Media.
Strike three, you're out.
Welcome back to another episode of Caught Listening here on Public House Media. Christian Imel with you. Broadcasting is part of the Public House Media Network. Don't forget you can subscribe, rate, review wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Google, Spreaker, Spotify, as well as iHeartRadio, and of course publichousemedia.org. Well, one of the beautiful parts about baseball, as we've all been talking about over the last month since there is no baseball to go experience, is the actual experience. What makes it great? What are some of the things that are most exciting? We had a great conversation last week with Asa Beal and Michael Wentworth, creators of the Fan Experience Index on FanGraphs. About that and how they weighted it and all of that. But that was on the major league side of things. And if you really want a great experience outside of just baseball, you got to go to the minor leagues. You have to go down to those AAA, AA, rookie ball affiliates, whatever it might be, to really enjoy more than just the baseball. And a guy who's experienced probably more minor league baseball than many people on this planet is Benjamin Hill. Ben's Biz, the blog on minor league baseball, MILB.com. And he's kind enough to spend some time with us here today to talk about his experiences and everything there. Ben, we really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to talk about baseball from the safety of my bedroom.
It's obviously a much different world than we're currently at. So before we get into the conversation about baseball, how are you? How is everything going on? I know this is a weird world and hopefully things are starting to turn for the better, but how are you doing with everything?
I mean, you know, my answer to this is, I'm obviously processing a lot like everyone is right now. It's kind of hard to, when you have a conversation with someone, it's tough to answer how are you, because I don't think anyone is like doing too well right now. But what I will say, under the circumstances, I am doing fine. I've been able to, keep my job even during a time without baseball, still have something to do every day to keep me occupied. Staying safe, staying healthy. Under the circumstances, I have nothing to complain about, but it is a lot to process. And, as a baseball writer, I think for like a lot of us, when you're going through a pandemic and when you're going through, social unrest and dealing with some very deep-rooted issues that cut to the heart of the American experience, sometimes it's tough just to, get online and get on Twitter and be like, hey, who wants to talk about minor league baseball? But at the same time, minor league baseball, as I've always said, each team is a reflection of the community in which it operates. So I think, it also, they have a chance to respond right now and to be, actors in their community that are part of the positive change we all wish to see. So there's my long answer for you. I'm good at rambling.
It's the right one, too, because that's the beautiful part about the minor leagues is the fact that, like you said, it's a reflection of the town that they're in, and regardless of the affiliation, that truly is that hometown team, because you have the hometown experiences from the mascots to the names to the jerseys to the theme nights, the food, all of it is very much a reflection of the community that they're a part of. And we've been seeing a lot of great minor league teams do their best to be even more a part of their community in these crazy times. You operate, obviously, a blog, Ben's Biz, Exploring America through Minor League Baseball and the fun that goes with it. And I've been watching and reading a lot of this for years now. But how did you get involved with this? How did it get started and how, where did it all come from?
Well, I get asked this question a lot and still haven't found like a quick and easy way to answer it, because it wasn't something that happened quickly or easily or with anything resembling much of a coherent plan in the early going. But first things first, I've always been a gigantic baseball fan for as long as I can remember, just obsessed with the game, playing the game, both organized baseball cards, wiffle ball, The Philadelphia Phillies were my team. So I was always just deeply, deeply a baseball fan. And I, one of the things I like most about baseball is how weird it is and how infinite it is and how you can go down so many nooks and crannies and find new things to explore and find things in the history that tie into today's games and all these weird little connections and secret connections and whatever. So baseball's great. And but I never had a job writing about baseball. I went to college and was not really pursuing journalism, writing, anything like that. But 2005, I was living in New York City. I still live in New York City. And a friend of mine called me up and said, "Hey, you like baseball? You seem like you're a good writer. I'm writing game recaps for minorleaguebaseball.com, you know, which is now MILB.com, and they need more people. And, you know, this is the first time there'd ever been a minor league baseball website. First time there'd been any attempt, you know, to kind of have a place where people could go that kind of covered the entirety of minor league baseball. So no one knew what they were doing. So I just like walked in and through my friend Zach's recommendation, got a job writing game recaps. And, all of a sudden my foot was in the door, and I didn't look at it as like necessarily some long-term career thing. I was just temping and hustling and doing anything I could to, you know, keep my head above water. So I just thought it was one more random thing. But, you know, I hit the off season, started coming in during the day, started like writing about how the teams were operating, getting assigned random stories, team naming stories. The next season started, got asked to write about promos. And that's when things really clicked for me because, you know, I could make jokes and not just do pure, you know, reporting, but I could write about crazy promotions and write about what teams are doing and still have fun with that. So I started writing a promo preview column, and then teams started getting in touch with me because no one had ever covered the industry in this way before, because outlets for it had never really existed. And teams like to read my stuff because, you know, they like to steal other teams' ideas as you know, if a promotion is smart in one place, it probably won't work for another. So I started getting an industry audience, and I realized, hey, maybe I stumbled into a niche writing about the promotions and the things teams do to get people in the stands, and, you know, started Ben's Biz blog and kept covering it. And, you know, always writing for the website as well, MILB.com, and, you know, stuck around long enough to finally get full time. And then once I was full time, I said, I got to travel and, you know, see these places, or how much of an expert can I be covering this industry if I've barely been to any of the places? And then I started traveling. And, you know, just traveled every year starting in 2010. And by the end of 2018, I've been to every minor league, affiliated minor league ballpark. And now just trying to keep it up, and things are crazy. And that's, again, I'm good at giving long answers as I ramble in my bedroom during a pandemic. But that's the long answer how my job came about.
And it's a lot of fun to read because, I mean, you're right. And working in baseball as long as I have, and specifically in promotions for a period of time, part of reading your blog was to see what other teams were doing, to see if maybe that could work in this market or the market that I was in at that time. You know, I mean, the first Three Stooges night I did was simply because it had worked in another, I was working for a New York team and it worked in that, in New York State. Whether it, you know, worked for us or not was to be determined. But that's the beauty of it. And it's one of the reasons why, from an industry side of things, I think we enjoy reading it and being a part of it. So, Last week we had a great conversation with Asa Beal and Michael Wentworth, two guys who created what was called the Fan Experience Index. It was put up on Fangraphs 2 years ago, and part of it was the game day experience at the major league level. One of the things that I always look at, and it's because of the career that I'm in, you've got to make fans want to come back to your ballpark, and there's so much of it. When you look at all the places that you've been in the minor league side of things, from stadium accessibility, ticket pricing, food at the ballpark, to in-game promotions, to giveaways, all that kind of stuff that goes into a game day experience, what do you give the most weight to? What are you most looking forward to when you go to a new stadium?
You know, it maybe can depend on a place-to-place basis. For me, I'm kind of looking for the cumulative of all those things just to gain what will hopefully amount to a unique experience. So in terms of the one thing I'm most excited about, I think, especially because of what I cover, you know, if I had to say the thing I'm most excited about, I think I'm most excited about seeing the promotions, both, you know, whatever the special, the theme night might be for the day, but also just the between inning contests and the general energy that the, you know, the front office and the game day staff works to provide. Because, you know, as you know, in minor league baseball, you know, most fans aren't coming there for, because they're big fans of the team itself and because they're, you know who the players are. So creating an atmosphere that is just fun regardless of anything else is the big thing. And I just really like seeing, you know, how each team approaches that in terms of the kind of energy they bring. And a lot of that comes down to leadership and to a spirit of risk taking. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you go to a place and it's just a little flat and it might be nice. It might be pleasant, but I think the biggest thing is just the energy that the team, the front office puts into it is, I think, one of the most important aspect, just for creating an environment that is fun, no matter what else is going on. But, you know, everyone's going to have their own answer for that. And that's what's so fun about something like baseball, that, you know, it's kind of like a 3-hour choose your own adventure in terms of the food, in terms of the promotion, in terms of the mascot, in terms of the game itself. You know, some people just might want to bring a scorebook and, you know, listen to the radio on their headphones, and that's all they need. And some people will barely even watch a second of the game. And that's what I love about it, is that it can kind of work as an entertainment product for so many types of people in so many different ways. But I think first and foremost, it just has to feel like a fun place to be as soon as you get inside.
Certainly one of the most important aspects of it is obviously that welcoming, that fun experience that fans can have. And hopefully we can have that here in 2020. We're talking with Ben Hill, Ben's Biz blog on MILB.com. Obviously, you know, I don't know where you would have been at this point in the year, where your travels would have taken you, but if you could kind of take me back to, you know, January or February, whatever it might be, and when you start maybe planning out some of your travels and what some of the things you were kind of looking forward to for this year that may have been a new experience or something to go and check out.
Yeah, well, you know, I think this is a case where procrastination paid off for me, because I kind of took my time in getting the specifics of my itinerary together. You know, I had some rough drafts, but I didn't really lay it out completely, and then that was good because I didn't, you know, go through the rental cars and planes and all that stuff and trying to make these trips happen. But in the early days, you know, my trips were a lot more like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and just a new place every night. And just because there's so many ballparks to go to, and I was just knocking them out. It was manic and exhausting and highly anxiety producing, but it was fun too. But as years have gone by, you know, I'm spending more time in each location. And now that I've been everywhere, I'm really focusing on, you know, new ballparks and then building trips around where new ballparks are. So, you know, last year I built trips around going to Amarillo to see the sod poodles, Fayetteville to see the woodpeckers, Las Vegas to see the Aviators. And this year it would have been somewhat similar. There was four, you know, affiliated minor league ballparks set to open in 2020, which is the most there had been since 2009, I believe. So new ballparks in Wichita, the Wichita Wind Surge, a AAA team, Fredericksburg Nationals, you know, a Class A advanced team, then heading down south, Kannapolis, the rebranded Kannapolis Cannonballers, new ballpark, and the Rocket City Trash Pandas playing in Madison, Alabama, you know, just outside of Huntsville. So those would have been the four locations I would have kind of centered the trips around this year. And hopefully, you know, I live in Brooklyn, so maybe some more local Northeast stuff and maybe some other stuff too. And that's the thing. There's just so much to visit. Just trying to do it all is like, you know, one dude making it up as I went along. It's been fun, but I often feel like I'm missing so much, and it creates a sense of like, I got to go back out there. I got to do it again. And, you know, a lot of running around in this gig.
Certainly. And the travel schedule, I'm sure, has probably gotten a little bit better and easier as you have now been everywhere. And there aren't as many places to just check off, but places to revisit. One of the things that, you know, is kind of talked about from a fan experience standpoint is obviously how different it is from the major league level to the minor league level. And the fact that at the minors, it's much more family oriented. It's about the fan experience as opposed to just the baseball game. Have you noticed any differences in terms of the level of play? Is there a difference between, you know, rookie ball to high A or double A to triple A in terms of fan experience and that kind of stuff that you see?
I mean, absolutely. It's, you know, it's not super cut and dry. You might, you know, find kind of a triple A style of experience at a Class A ballpark in Dayton, you know. So it's not 100% uniform through the levels, but generally, broadly speaking, the more you go up the levels or down the levels, the more the experience changes in one direction or another. And that's been always one of my favorite things about minor league baseball, is that under this one you know, professional sports umbrella, you can have something that encompasses, you know, such a wide variety of, you know, the level of play, the size of the ballpark, the type of community the ballpark is in. And to me, that's some of my favorite things is, you know, kind of making those distinctions and, you know, being, you know, well, in terms of North Carolina, you know, that you can go to a Durham Bulls game, a really great AAA park, you know, all the bells and whistles and amenities. And within like an hour drive, less than that, you can go to the Appy League and see a game in Burlington, North Carolina, you know, in an old ballpark that was originally built in Danville and disassembled and brought by train to Burlington and then rebuilt. And that is still hosting, you know, minor league baseball. And the fact that it's still both of those things are so close to each other in both minor league baseball, but yet so different. You know, that's just one of many, many examples. And there's just, you know, there's regional character, there's character with the size of the town. And that's what's so fun about it. And it also gives you a reason to go to places that, you know, if you have the luxury to travel and go on ballpark road trips, it puts you in places that you probably wouldn't go otherwise because it has a minor league team. And it, in a way, somewhat literally puts that town on the map, so to speak. And I think it's a really special thing to have a minor league baseball town or team in your community.
It's definitely so much fun. And especially with, I don't think people realize how many can be located so close by. I mean, you know, currently living in North Carolina, I believe there are 11 affiliated teams in North Carolina from AAA down to Rookie League. And then, you know, when I was working in Iowa in Davenport with Quad Cities, we were there, but then you had 45 minutes up the way in Clinton, and then you had 2.5 hours away at AAA ballpark in the Iowa Cubs. That's one of the beauties of it is just how prevalent and how available minor league baseball is to so many people and to those communities to be able to, you know, for lack of a better term, harness the energy of that area and that community. So certainly one of the exciting parts is just how readily available minor league baseball is for so many people, and especially in areas where maybe, you know, for example, again, North Carolina, the closest major league team is 5 hours, depending which way you go, to DC or to Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. And North Carolina is the heart of it. Despite that lack of proximity to major league sport or major league baseball, there's no team that has more minor league team or no state with more minor league teams than North Carolina. When people ask me, you know, as someone who's been all around the country, you know, where's a great place to have a road trip, I almost always say North Carolina or the Carolinas. You know, add South Carolina to that and you have just, you know, whatever, 15, 16, 17 teams. Just within two states. It's a remarkably great region.
A lot of fun here. And like you mentioned, you include South Carolina and it gets Myrtle Beach involved and vacation destinations too. I mean, you know, for a lot of people, I'll even say it flat out. One of my favorite places to go visit now that I'm here in North Carolina is Asheville, simply because of the tourists and what that community has become. And because they steer into the curve, I don't think how many people, and honestly, I didn't realize it until I moved to North Carolina, that the Asheville baseball team actually has a copyright on the term Thirsty Thursday in minor league baseball. I had no idea about that until I moved down here, but it's because of what their community is all about and some of the stuff that they have there and being called Beer City.
Yeah, I actually, the first time I visited Asheville, I wrote a story about that, about them trademarking, and in their front offices, they have a copy of that trademark, like as a plaque, the Thirsty Thursday trademark. So they started it, and yeah, now they're suiting up as the Beer City tourists in reference to, especially in this period of Asheville history, how much you know, the microbrew scene has risen up around it.
Yep.
And that's great to see, and that's the kind of thing, you know, there's 160 teams, you know, we could have 160 discussions along those lines about little things that the team does that speaks to that place specifically. And it's a great way to get an American education just about the history of a region through the team names, through the food offerings, through the one night rebrandings, through the giveaways. I know that I know so much more about this country than I would have just through minor league baseball. Yes, a lot of it can be frivolous, but I think taken together, it really creates a much better understanding of this country as a whole and an education I'm grateful to have gotten through minor league baseball.
Again, you're 100% correct, because, like I said, when I was in Davenport, Iowa, I had no idea the history there with regards to sandwiches. Like, I think one of the descendants of sliced bread or something like was there. Like, I don't know, but like the history in Davenport, of the fact that they were named the swing of the Quad Cities because of their jazz roots, which you wouldn't think in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, on the Mississippi River, that there's deep jazz roots, but there are. And same thing in Greensboro. The fact that they, I didn't know till I moved down here where the Grasshoppers are, that the fact that Wrangler Jeans was there. And when, until, well, I knew that a few years back when they changed their name to the Jeansboro Grasshoppers and wore a full Canadian tuxedo as a uniform. So when they rebranded for one day. But it's incredible to see what minor league baseball does and all the wonderful parts of their history. We're talking with Benjamin Hill of Ben's Biz. Blog on MILB.com. One of the things that you do, I think it's really, really fun, and I'd love for people, once we get to go to know a little bit more about it, you have celiac disease, and when you travel, obviously we talked about food being a huge part of the game day experience there, but you actually find a designated eater to try all this. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you go about finding someone to do that.
Yeah, well, necessity is the mother of invention, and it was 2010 that I first started, setting off on these road trips, making up, what I was doing kind of as I went along. And of course, food was a big part of that. How can it not be when you're visiting minor league ballparks? So in the early days, I would just try anything. And, it was a real one-man operation. I'd just get like a front office staffer to say, hey, can you take a picture of me while I bite this hot dog? Real low budget operation. But in 2012, I got diagnosed with celiac disease, and that means no wheat, rye, barley. And that means, most ballpark food is off limits, anything that's on bread or breaded and fried. And so it was just an idea that just kind of came to me. I was like, well, I can't stop covering the food because I can't eat a lot of it. I'm going to have to get a designated eater. It just kind of popped right in there. So I kind of knew that was the route I would have to take. So it's evolved through the years. In terms of how I recruit designated eaters. But generally what I do is I post my itinerary and I say, it used to be first come, first served, but now I've changed it to, I'll post my itinerary, I'll promote it on Twitter, and I'll say, hey, if you want to be a designated eater on this night in which I'm in town, then get in touch. Tell me why, just send me an email. Tell me why. And, so that's the way I kind of do it now. And I get really earnest responses and, things that make me feel grateful that I have the job I have, and just seeing how excited people are just to come to a ballpark and be my designated eater. And often the way they correspond with me goes beyond the food and just speaks to why they like what I do, because they also love minor league baseball and what minor league baseball means to them. So meeting designated eaters has just been a great way to profile fans all across the country and their love of minor league baseball. And I've met so many people through doing that. And then, they just kind of get to embarrass themselves a little bit, and I'll take pictures and make short videos of them trying the food. And just as we were saying earlier, just as with anything else, when I'm doing food coverage, I'm going to search, sometimes it's funny when there's some crazy oversized, grotesque concession item. But first things first, the number one thing I want to focus on is something that's regional. And that's what I ask teams when I'm visiting or, before I visit, I say, what do you have that no one else has? What should I be looking for that speaks to you as a franchise that you can't find anywhere else? And obviously the food is a part of that. And that's it's been great having designated eaters. And, from a promotional level, that's why we're seeing so many teams over the last couple of years, have these one night rebrandings as a favorite local food product. Started with the Fresno tacos, but now it's nationwide, and it's a great way to learn about America through its culinary history now. Minor league baseball really opens a lot of doors.
It's one of my favorite, first thing I do whenever I get to a ballpark, whether it's, a major league or a minor league one, I gotta take a walk, see what food's available and map out what I'm eating for those 2.5-4 hours that I'm going to be there, whatever it might be. So a lot of fun for that. And hopefully a few more designated eaters get to be a part of your life here coming up pretty soon. I do want to ask, I know it's a weird topic to discuss because we don't really know all the details about it, but minor league baseball, as we've talked about, really shows the history of America, and it seems as though, unfortunately, a lot of towns are going to lose out on that with the MLB contraction of minor league affiliates and whatnot. I don't know your thoughts on this. I haven't really done much in looking for you in terms of if you've said anything about it, but knowing where you've been and all these places that you've been, when you first heard the thoughts of MLB contraction, what went through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very complicated topic, and especially for me, as because I'm a Major League Baseball employee, as you know, we run the Minor League Baseball website.
Right.
So it's been a very, you know, awkward in that regard, kind of being seeing Minor League Baseball the client and Major League Baseball the employer, you know, having these contentious negotiations. I mean, certainly speaking for myself, and you know, my work speaks for itself, and kind of what I base my career on speaks for itself, and that's, you know, exploring minor league baseball, or exploring America through minor league baseball. So the fact that there have been so many teams and so many small towns has been great as a way to explore America, as a way to meet people, as a way to see the ways in which the game still exists, you know, even here in the second decade of the 21st century. Or is it the third decade now? I don't know. But, you know, it's just great to, it just provides so much to explore. So as someone who's made a career out of exploring America through minor league baseball, I want to see as much minor league baseball as possible, personally, for sure. I do, you know, understand that, you know, there's 160 teams right now. It's not like that's some sacred number from on high that has to be the number for all time. And I understand that, you know, when there's negotiations, both sides are going to have various needs and wants, and, you know, might have to come to some new conclusions. But for me and what I do, I want to see minor league baseball, you know, exist as close as it can going forward, you know, as close to what it's been going forward. But now we're also adding, you know, this the coronavirus, the COVID-19 situation on top of it. And it puts a lot of minor league teams in a lot worse shape going forward, to now not have any revenue in 2020. So, you know, it makes their status seem uncertain, even not even taking into effect or taking into account the contraction talks. So it's one thing on top of another right now. And for that reason, it can be really hard to discern exactly how this is all going to shake out. And it's been tough to try to make sense of it. And it's been tough for me to kind of, unfortunately, sit on the sidelines a little more than I'd like to and watch this all play out.
100%. I mean, I can see every side of it, but having worked at minor league baseball for, you know, in the affiliated level, those towns, I mean, that's for some of them, it's all they have. So, you know, it's definitely a very strange time to be in, for sure. We're talking with Ben Hill of Ben's Biz Blog, Exploring America Through Minor League Baseball on MILB.com. We've come to the point of the show where we let the listeners get involved and ask some quick hitting questions. So we play some pepper back and forth with your questions, and you can always submit them via social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just search Caught Listening by Public House Media, or email the show caughtlisteningphm@gmail.com. I have a feeling, Ben, going through these are going to be tough for you to answer because how much you love minor league baseball, it's hard to pick any favorites, but I guess we'll do our best. So the first one is coming from Mike, wants to know your favorite minor league stadium that you've been to.
Yeah, well, number one question I get, and you nailed it. It's very hard to answer that one because, you know, it just there's so many factors, and, you know, I might catch one on one day and one team on a bad day. And anyway, without going on and on about it, it's very hard to figure out. And after I visited every team, I did my best attempt to make sense of this. I did a whole series at the end of the 2018 season called Ben's Best, Ben's Best. Trying to say my favorites, and I broke it down level by level to kind of help me make sense of it a little bit. So AAA, and certainly one of my all-time favorites, is El Paso, Chihuahua, Southwest University Park, really unique architecture. And, you know, it's right there on the Mexican border. There's no other ballparks I'm aware of where, you know, you can literally see another country, and just the landscape between El Paso and Juarez is really unique, and great food, of course, too, with an obvious Mexican influence. So I love that, the home of the El Paso Chihuahuas, you know, AA, the Red and Fightin' Phils, whatever it's called now, First Energy Ballpark or Stadium, historically called Municipal Stadium, but that's like a 60-year-old ballpark, but great front office, great fans, long-time affiliation with the Phillies for decades, and a best of both worlds scenario of like fans who really care about the team, but also a crazy, fun, irreverent minor league environment. So that's just two. You know, I could go on and on, but El Paso, Redding, we talked about Asheville. That's one of the best. Daytona, Jackie Robinson Ballpark, another great one. You know, I could talk all day, but there's some.
Yeah, for me, I mean, there's three that I love the most, and the ones I've been to, there certainly haven't been enough, but El Paso is right up there at the top. I was living in El Paso when it opened. I love that ballpark. Love the view, love that city. And then State College, I love the view from the press box at State College, where the spikes there. And of course, you know, a trip to Penn State and the Creamery there is never a bad option. And, you know, I'm a little biased on Quad Cities and modern Woodman Park right there on the Mississippi River. And just the view is just gorgeous there. So little bias on that sense. Your favorite minor league promotion? That are like, I don't know if this is a theme night, a giveaway, in-game thing, but I guess maybe the your favorite thing that you've seen at a minor league game.
You know, like stadium, that can be a tough one to answer, but a couple years ago, I kind of hit on my default answer for this just because it was so unique and, you know, not something a team can plan for per se, but it was so awesome. This was in 2017. As you recall, there was the national eclipse. Right. And, you know, so there was six or seven minor league teams that were in the path of totality during the eclipse, you know, where the sun was totally blocked out by the moon. So every team in the path of totality staged some kind of game or ballpark event, you know, where people could be in a ballpark together during this eclipse. And I ended up going to Columbia, home of the Fireflies, Columbia, South Carolina. And I saw a weekday afternoon game in Columbia, South Carolina, that took place with a built-in eclipse delay, and having the game stop and everyone put on their glasses, and you know, to be in a crowd of 8,000 or 9,000 people as it got pitch black, you know, during an afternoon game, and then slowly went back to normal, and then the game restarted like nothing had happened. It was surreal. But it was magical to be part of that and to see a team, you know, pull off an event like that based around a natural phenomenon. I think, the coolest promotion I've ever witnessed, just because, you know, that is something that's really going to stick with you.
I remember wishing that we actually, I was at Quad Cities at the time, wishing we had a game that day that we could do something like that. So for me, I mentioned it last week on the show. I had the chance to go to a Harrisburg Senators game last year, and their front office, the higher ups, like the GMs or vice presidents, whatever they have, they all do these random music videos in full color suits, like Technicolor suits. It's one of the funniest things, but they perform then on the field. And the night that I was there, it doesn't happen often, but the night that I was there, they did a live dance to It's Raining Men, which I just thought was hilariously entertaining and goes back to what you started at the beginning of this conversation, which was the front offices and how they make the event, the game, an event, as opposed to just sitting down and watching a baseball game. So that was definitely one of the more entertaining ones for me. Last one. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, when I was in Harrisburg, they gave me a hand-me-down suit and had me dance with that crew of dancers. So I have good memories of that as well.
I'm pretty jealous of that, to be 100% honest with you. Last one here is, obviously you'd mentioned there are four new ballparks this year that you were looking to get to. Were there any ballparks that maybe you didn't get a chance to visit before they went away, whether if a team had moved or the stadium was torn down and reconstructed? Were there any places you wish you had gotten to visit?
That's a great question. You know, before I really came into this job, I wasn't a huge minor league baseball fan and didn't, you know, I learned so much about it just through kind of getting the job and then learning as I went. So I don't have a super deep rooted sense of, you know, old ballparks that when I was growing up, I wish I had been to, or this, that, and the other. But when, of course, just through my writing, I've written about a lot of old ballparks or had people tell me about old ballparks. And I'm trying to think, one that jumps out to me is the Arkansas Travelers. You know, now they're at Dickie Stevens Field, but before that they were at Ray Winder Field. And people just love to tell me stories about that place. And it seemed like it had a real ramshackle, kind of rough-edged energy. You know, some legendary kind of Thirsty Thursday beer garden type, you know, drinking situations. There was this guy nicknamed Hook Slide who, you know, would set up beer can pyramids and then charge toward them and slide into them and knock them down. And he was basically like a front office, like sanctioned character. And it just was like so many stories from this place were like, man, minor league baseball is not like that anymore. You know, also, you know, like the El Paso, the old days of El Paso with, you know, Jim Paul was a legendary front office guy. who was a real promo innovator, was at the Dudley Dome. You know, it'd be great to go, yep. go there in like the 70s and 80s and kind of see a real innovative, wacky environment. So that's the sort of thing I think I would like to see, is maybe some, you know, 1970s, 80s baseball when things were a little more rough around the edges, but we could also maybe have a chance to see some of the early innovators really try their hand at some goofy stuff, and probably stuff that in retrospect would be like, woof, couldn't get away with that today, you know, for whatever reason. I'd like to kind of experience that sort of environment for myself.
That's the part about this that you just kind of look back and you go, man, what that must have been like, and getting a chance to hopefully see it all. So, Ben, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you so much. Before we let you go, just let folks know kind of how they can stay in touch with you and stay following up on all the stuff that you do once we get back to the normal.
Yeah, well, I write for MILB.com, the official site of minor league baseball. All my work is available there at, you know, MILB.com/BensBiz, BENSBIZ. And then Ben's Biz blog, which I'm no longer actively updating, but that has just years and years of ballpark travel posts. And just Google Ben's Biz blog or bensbiz.moblogs.com. And Twitter at Ben's Biz and Instagram, the Ben's Biz. And on Instagram is where I've been kind of going through from the beginning and posting, you know, about every single ballpark I've visited, kind of a long-term project. So, yeah, there's a lot out there. Just Google Ben's Biz and, you know, find your way into it and then get in touch with me. I love hearing from people, please.
We appreciate the time so much. And the next time you're down in the Triad to check out Winston-Salem or Greensboro or down in North Carolina in general, if I can make it, I'd love to just go with you and watch what you do and enjoy a baseball game. But we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, looking forward to it. Can't wait to get back on the road, and let's hope we see baseball again sometime soon.
All right, that's Ben Hill of Ben's Biz blog, North America through minor league baseball. We appreciate his time with us as always, and we appreciate your guys' time with us as we always do every single week. Hopefully, once we get back to baseball and minor league baseball, you guys can go check out some of the amazing places that there are in minor leagues. The stadiums are great, the people are great, the communities are great, and it is really a treat to be able to go and spend some time at those ballparks. Till next week, I hope you guys enjoy yourself, you stay safe, you stay healthy. If you have a suggestion or a question that you want to be a part of the show, go ahead and email us, caughtlisteningphm@gmail.com, or find us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Just search Caught Listening by Public House Media. You can find me on there as well on Twitter at Chris Heimel, ChrisHeimall. Till next week, I'm Chris Heimel. You've been Caught Listening.
Virginia, William Hill, America's number one sports book, is now here. And we have a special 2021 offer to help you bet on all your favorite sports risk-free. Download the William Hill Sportsbook app, and when you sign up, you can get started with a risk-free bet of up to $2,021. Use promo code RADIORF.
Terms and conditions apply. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call, text, or chat our confidential and toll-free helpline at 1-888-532-3500.
Let's make it interesting with William Hill Sportsbook.